Meeting will come to order. Representative Olin, is your testifier here?
Yes.
Okay.
Ready to go.
Representative Leader, would you move House File 1545?
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 1545.
Representative Olin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please present your bill.
Okay, today I'm here for a project that began a few years ago. In the year 2002, as a lot of this committee, or some of this committee, realizes, Roseau suffered a very severe flood that damaged a considerable amount of the community. Since that time, they've been back a few times to visit you people, and they've been to Congress and a few other places, and I would like to at this time thank the state and anyone else who was assistant in funding up till now, because groups have done a nice job of helping. What we're here today on is what we hope is the culmination of this project. We're here to seek money for the beginning of the final project of this project, which would be called the East Diversion Project, which would allow Roseau River to be diverted around the city if necessary. And what I need specifically at this time is $4.1 million, which would cover engineering, some construction costs, some land acquisition, and two bridges. This project has been a project that's been ongoing, that's had the support of the DNR, the Corps of Engineers, the City of Roseau, the State of Minnesota, the federal government, and many others. It's been a long time coming, and at this stage we're hoping to be able to get the funding started so we can actually be in a position that next year, when WERDA passes, the Congress passes a WERDA bill, hopefully in a couple months, we'll be ready to go and keep this project moving. Today I have with me the man most influential in getting this project done. In every city, there's always an individual that does considerable work behind the scenes and in the open, and is willing to spend numerous hours running back and forth. In this case, running back and forth is an hour longer than I have. I have 5+, he has 6+ hours. So today I would like to introduce what I call the man who has kept this project alive, the man who spent a lot of effort and persistence and patience and a lot of thankfulness. He's getting to where we're now at the stage where this final part can be offered. I'd like to introduce the mayor of Roseau, Jeff Pulowski.
Mayor Pulowski, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thank you for hearing this bill. As Representative Olin said, it's directly related to the flood of 2002. It was about a 500-year event in our city and did about $120 million in damage in of a city of 2,800. It didn't leave much left. Thanks to a lot of support, both at the federal and state, we've been really busy since 2002. We completed, I'm proud to say, we completed our last FEMA-related project just this summer, and that puts a cap on about $45 million in infrastructure-related, replacing facilities, et cetera, since over the last 3 to 4 construction season. And it also included a very important, the thing that's always been our number one priority, and that is to remove the city from the 100-year floodplain. We have completed 2 major flood mitigation projects, but the big one remains, the big project, and that's what the Corps of Engineers has been working. They spent $1.5 million to date finding out if there's a project that's feasible for our city to remove us from the floodplain, and if it is, what is it? And they looked at 8 different alternatives, and they came up with the East Diversion Project, which you have a handout. I apologize that it really tests the reading glasses, but it's as best we could get for today anyway. But what the project is it removes about a 4.5 mile channel that would split the flows of the river under high water events and would remove the city from the 100-year floodplain. The cost of the project is about $25 million total, and it's got a cost-benefit ratio of almost 3-1, which is tremendous. You need at least a 1-1 in order to qualify for a core project. It's got almost a 3-1 cost-benefit ratio. So for every dollar spent, there'd be $3 in benefit. That's really important as you try to get a federal project. But what's happened here, and I'll cut right to the chase, is that everybody agrees from the state, federal, that this is a good project. It's a necessary project. What happened is the reason we're here is basically a timing issue. Last year in 2006, a word of bill we expected to pass in Congress, it did not pass. And so we were able, the plan was when WERDA, as WERDA went forward, the state and federal cost share, we would work with the DNR to come up with the state share through their flood hazard mitigation program. Well, when WERDA didn't pass last year, we were looking at best case scenario, WERDA passing in 2007. And we have, when it gets into WERDA, it gets a little complicated, but we have representatives here from Senator Klobuchar's office, Senator Coleman's office, and Congressman Peterson's office that are here with us today. They've also submitted letters, Madam Chair, explaining how this whole thing works. But what's happening is, in order to stay on track, keep this project so that we can get this thing completed by 2009-2010, we need to get state support this year, part of it this year, and the balance next year, rather than waiting for a 2008 bonding bill through the DNR Flood Hazard Mitigation Program. I don't know if I'm doing an adequate job explaining this, but...
Have you given us a sense of what it is you would need this year and next year?
Yeah, okay. Madam Chair, to stay ahead of this program, again, we must assume that WERDA is going to pass this year, okay? And that in order to keep it on track, what we need is that there's $4.1 million in this bill. $500,000 would be for design and engineering of two bridges. There's four bridges in the project for two bridges. And then there'd be $500,000 for land acquisition. And then there'd be $3.1 million for the bridge construction. That would be the bridge for the State Highway 11. And then there's a County State Aid Highway bridge that this diversion will go under.
So are you suggesting $1 million for this year and 3.1 the next year?
No, Madam Chair, we're suggesting the entire $4.1 million this year, and then the balance, the rest of the state share, which is just about $7 million, would be for next year's bonding bill under the DNR Flood Hazard Mitigation Program.
Representative Olin, he just referenced the letters. You might want to make some mention to the committee about the support you have for.
Yes, I have three letters here. I have one signed by Congressman Colin Peterson. I have one signed by Senator Amy Klobuchar, and I have one signed by Senator Norm Coleman, all three of which support this project and indicate they're trying to get the WERDA money through this year, hopefully. And I'll leave these letters for you to make copies for the members if they want to see them later.
Further testimony or questions? Well, you've obviously done a very good job of making the case. And all of these bills we hear and Representative Singleton has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry about that. You were talking about the WERDA funding, that would be for this fall. Is that correct? If it happens,
Madam
Mayor
Chair, Representative Singleton, right now we feel that WERDA needs to get passed. On page two of your handout, there's a timeline, and we feel that WERDA needs to pass by September of 2007 to keep our project on track, so that the Corps has the funding necessary to do the work they need to do to keep up with this project. If that doesn't happen, if WERDA doesn't happen by that time, then we'll have to go to Plan B as far as what we're doing for next year, et cetera. But obviously, let's say WERDA doesn't pass for 3 years. Obviously, we're not going to be building bridges with state dollars per project that doesn't exist at the federal level where the Corps doesn't have the funding. It's kind of the fear here is that if we're to pass this year, which we're expecting it to happen, and if we don't get state assistance this year, it would be the lack of state assistance that would push the project back a year. Okay? I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you. That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, and the bill will be held over for
possible. I was going to make one final comment. When you look at these letters, they're all three of these congressional people are expecting word of the task this year with this project included.
And the pages can just retrieve those letters and give them to the committee. Thank you. And members, we have a quorum. Representative Dunkey, will you move minutes of Thursday, March 1?
I do.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries and minutes are approved. Representative Solberg just made it in time. And is Representative Anzalt joining you?
Yes, here. Yes, I would like to have him join me. And if I can find a copy of the bill, it would really be nice. You got one for me?
Okay. Representative Solberg moves House File 248.
I am so organized.
That time of year.
And he's joined by Representative Anzalt.
And maybe we can have Commissioner Mandich come up also.
Commissioner.
We have Representative Commissioner come up as well.
Madam Chair, thank you, first of all, for scheduling this. The Can of Steel project has probably been around for those of you that have served on this committee for quite a while. There's a little brief history of the project in your folder. The Can of Steel pit is an abandoned mine pit north of Bovee Coleraine area. It sits up here. The town is down below it, and Trout Lake is the natural flowage in from that watershed. And of course, in the 1906, when they started mining there, they weren't too concerned about water or anything else. In fact, is they developed the process of washing iron ore to wash the sand out of it, malt ore, to be able to put into the blast furnaces, and they dumped the tailings basins in Trout Lake at the time. We have Slush Dump Bay and Bugaloosa, which were filled up with the tailings basin. We no longer do that. When the mine was abandoned, they just left it, fenced it. It was a requirement at the time, and water's been filling up and coming over. We've been trying to deal with when that will happen, and if we don't do something about it, it will flow over, and we will have some tragedies and a tooth. Cities will be underwater. We used to live on the hill of Bovee. If we'd waited long enough, I suppose I'd have Lakeshore.
I should say, a few years ago, we actually toured this and walked down to what was then not quite at your doorstep. I don't know whether it's moved any closer.
It has come up close to it. And this is actually Representative Anzell's district now, but... So I'd like to have him give some perspective of it as well.
Representative Anfield, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'd like to also introduce County Commissioner Mark Mandich from Itasca County. Also, Mr. Doug Learmont, who's the project manager in the audience here. And Mayor David Lottie, who is the chairperson of the Western Mesabi Mine Planning Board. Very briefly, Madam Chair and members, this is an emergency. This is a problem that Representative Solberg and others have been wrestling with since about 1994. It's an area which began as a mining operation in the early 1900s. It ceased as a mining operation in the mid-1980s. And as is the case all too often on the Great Mesabi Iron Range, our mining companies, who are, of course, great employers, but when they leave mining and when the mines have played out, they have a tendency to just walk away and leave the people with the issues yet to come. And that's why we're here. We're asking for $3.4 million in bonding to construct a siphoning system which will enable us to move the water out of the pit. And if you look in your packet, you'll see a very handy map. The construction project is designed to move the water out of the pit southward into a lake called Trout Lake, and out the south end of Trout Lake in a small creek, and finally into the Swan River and ultimately into the Mississippi River system. This is a project that we feel must be funded, must be done, because of the water level, as Representative Solberg explained. The experts will tell us that we are one normal winter snowfall and one normal spring runoff away from a potential catastrophe here. So we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have, and our technical experts are here as well to assist us.
Are there questions of the authors?
Madam Chair, maybe we can have the chair of the county commissioner just give us a little brief, very brief.
Mr. Mandich,
yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. The county has been involved in this for the last 7-8 years. We have put money into the project for the study of it. They did a lot of test wells all around that. All evidence is within the next probably 4 to 5 years, there could be a serious hazard there for the city, the communities of Bovee and Coleraine. Mm-hmm. There's a railroad there. Obviously, you're aware of our two major projects that are potential projects up there, Minnesota Steel and Mesaba Energy. That rail line would be critical for both of those projects. And if that pit overflowed, that also would be taken out. And I would really like you folks to seriously consider this, because if something happens, it would be a travesty, and for a lot of the community, there are two communities up there that probably roughly 2,000 people between the two communities.
Representative Howes has a question.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Solberg, I see on the back of the map, and it appears the map is made by the Department of Natural Resources, and I see Mr. Loxmo is in the audience. Are they okay with this? Have they helped in design how you're doing this? And a final question, and he'll probably answer that, and he can hear the question, he's walking up. Trout Lake, what kind of a lake is that? Will it be affected at all by the plans before us?
Let me answer the second part, if I may, first, Madam Chair, Representative Howes. Trout Lake has steep banks on the north side of it, and it's kind of low on the south side of Trout Lake. And the creek that says Trout Creek flows about 3 miles down into the Swan River. But at times of high water levels, it actually flows backwards. So there's not much of a drop from the outlet of Trout Creek into Swan River. If we put all the water into Trout Lake, we would have flooding on the south side of the Trout Lake as well. So that's why they have designed a siphoning system to go over another hill and into the Swan River and a different place. It also, since my understanding is that Trout Creek is a, kind of grown up and so forth, and to change the channel of that is something that you probably don't want to do in this environment. So that's why the proposal is before us the way it is. And the first part of your question, I would refer to Mr. Loxmo.
Mr. Loxmo, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members, Scott Loxmo, Director of Division of Waters for DNR. DNR has been involved with this project as it's moved along. I mean, as you've heard, the water levels have risen substantially, and we've So there is a need for an outlet on this lake to deal, to have a controlled outlet so you don't have some catastrophic event occur. And there has been previous monies appropriated. We have a grant for $450,000 to the board that's paid for the engineering and the analysis and the permitting and environmental review is what's being done now. So that set the stage for this request for the construction.
Follow-up, Representative and House?
A little follow-up. Just is the I'm trying to picture this in my mind, so I'm picturing that this water could just at some point rush out of there and create problems, and you would rather control how it leaves there once it gets, or you don't want it to get to a level that it's going the wrong way. Is that basically the idea?
Mr. Lyons,
Chair, Representative Howe. Yes, it's much better to have a controlled outlet. I think he also had a question about water quality and what the impacts are. And basically, as I understand it, and I haven't, maybe the locals could answer this better, but I think the water quality in Canastillo Pit is probably a much better water quality, or equal, if not better, than the receiving waters.
Just a very short follow-up, Madam Chair. Thank you. I appreciate that. When you finish this project, Mr. Luxmore, I'd like you to come back up to my neighboring district. I still have a portion of Lake Beltane, and I'm sure you're familiar with that lake. It has a problem with getting water out of it. And well, when you fix this one, we'd welcome you back to help us with that one.
Madam Chair, members, under our flood damage reduction program, we have had projects in the past that provide lake outlet solutions, and we continue to work with local governments to do those.
Representative Solberg.
My sister lives on Lake Carnelia, North Stillwater, which was probably one of the first ones that had this type of a system put in over the hill and into the St. Clair River.
Representative Scalzi has a question.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And for Kent Lockesmoe, before you leave, I was just kind of curious. You say that the water quality is probably better than what's in Trout Lake, and I'm wondering, are there any trout in Trout Creek or Trout Lake, and do the tailings or whatever you call them that's been deposited in the lake, do they overflow and into the Mississippi River, and are they harmful?
Representative Anzelt looks like he'd like to answer the first part of that, at least.
Madam Chair and Representative Scalzi, the water quality, as has been stated, is good. There are fish actually in the Canastillo Pit. The engineering report and feasibility and permitting that has been done and will be done before this construction begins indicates that there will be no negative impact downstream, downriver, downlake from any of the water that will be leaving the Canastillo.
But are there trout in Trout Creek?
Madam Chair, there really there used to be a long time ago. There aren't any longer. Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair, I was mayor of Bovee, and at one time we dumped our sewage into Trout Lake as well. And quite frankly, the it was a sewage. The phosphates were in there. It wasn't just raw sewage. That's all been taken care of with the new sewage plant when I was mayor of that town. But the trout lake does need to have flushing on it as well. And there were a couple of other options that they've considered over the years to go east through Taconite and through Holman Lake, or to the west and go through the Prairie River. So both of them are at a higher elevation, and so naturally it would come into Trout Lake. The residents want the flushing of the lake. They want the water to come through, but they don't want so much of it that they flood their homes, and that's the reason for the engineering that's been taking place. But other options have been studied a great deal.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I haven't really had time to study this bill, but I just want the chairman of Ways and Means to know that if this is his bill, I'm sure I'm for it.
Actually, Madam Chair, the very big chief author is sitting alongside me, Representative Anzell, and it's actually his district, but I happen to sign on first, and I don't know why.
Well, I'll still be for
it.
Thank you for bringing the issue for us, and thank you from the community for being present.
Thanks.
Representative Peterson is... Representative Peterson, your people are here?
Madam Chair, I'd move House File 1099 for possible inclusion in some later bill.
Representative Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1099 converts $5.282 million in bonding to the general fund, reducing bond sales in 2005 and 2006 that were issued, and will allow us to complete a project that you've heard about for more than a decade and for which we've approved bonds in past legislative sessions. We're talking about the Lewis and Clark Water Project.
And I'm going to interrupt you because you have a delete everything.
Yep, that's true. Thank you. DE1.
Madam Chair, I've moved the DE1 amendment at this time.
That amendment is before us, members, to get it before us as the author wants. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried. That is now before us. So, speaking to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Junkie. The Lewis and Clark Rural Water System will bring water from near the Missouri River in South Dakota to the city of Laverne, Worthington, Rock County Rural Water System, and the Lincoln Pipestone Rural Water System, which is in my legislative district. And it's a multi-state project that's financed in part by the federal government, Bureau of Reclamation. The feds pay 80% of the total project costs, and each of the three states pay 10% of system costs attributable to their state's use of water from the Lewis and Clark project. Participating local water systems must also pay 10% of the cost attributed to delivering water to their systems. So this file, House File 1099, converts the bond proceeds, which have been approved for this project, to general fund appropriations. This change avoids a complicated approach which has been developed for triggering the state investment. State bond proceeds were going to be spent to pay for local water infrastructure projects. We'll have an example of that here in a minute. The local water systems were then going to pay an amount equal to the state funding for their projects to the Lewis and Clark Water System. Okay, so this mechanism was developed because of limitations on how bond proceeds can be spent. Now, the change in general fund appropriations avoid all of the project payment shuffling. So to continue, the general fund appropriation also ensures that the state and local share of this project are committed at the earliest possible date. Under the Lewis and Clark Project's federal authorizing legislation, the federal government will pay for inflation once the state and local contributions have been made. Therefore, if we make this contribution now rather than waiting project by project for these funds to be committed, we will cut off inflationary increases to the benefit of both the state and the participating local water utilities. So many have worked on this project for more than a decade, and we're grateful for the support that it has received in the past, and hope this conversion from bond proceeds to general fund appropriations can be accomplished this year in order to complete state and local funding for the project. And to describe this conversion is today two people from Laverne, Red Arndt, who I met in 2000 when I toured the ethanol plant in Laverne, and Andy Steensma, former member and mayor of Laverne, who I've known since I was a teenager. So if you guys could explain what we're trying to do here today.
And so, members, just to summarize then, this there was previous bonding authority, but because of the nature of the project, this is one of those that requires cash. You may recall when Peter Sousen made his presentation that cash has no rules as bonding, and sometimes a project doesn't fit. And that is the argument they're making in this particular case. So we have Mr. Arndt, and Representative Stevensma is back. So Mr. Arndt, are you speaking first?
Yes, please.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Madam Chairman and committee. My name is Red Arndt, and I represent the City of Laverne and the Lewis and Clark Board of Directors. I also serve as its board chairman. So I've been working with the Lewis and Clark since 1990. We've been working this project since then. In the year 2000, we received federal authorization to build the project. The project includes 80% funding from the federal government, 10% funding from the state, and 10% funding of the local. In 2005 and 2006, the state of Minnesota gave us bonding proceeds of $5.3 million approximately to build projects within the member systems. At that time, we thought we had just about all of the money spent. Subsequently, we found out that the water tower in Laverne, which was almost $1 million, a water tower for Rockboro Water, which was, again, over $1 million, could not be used under this scenario because of the time frame in which it was completed and the bonding bills passed. And so in order to use the $5.3 million, and the city of Worthington also built a water tower, which, to my knowledge, has been approved by the PFA. That's the committee that we're the agency that we got to go through. But in order to spend the rest of the money, each of the systems has to spend the money in their local area, and in turn that we would apply for the bonding money to pay for that, and then we would send money into the Lewis and Clark Inc. as the state's share, and that way the infrastructure is paid for by state money, stays in the state through the bonding proceeds. The match that goes with this $5.3 million has to be matched by the local dollars. The local members already are bonding and are paying their local share, which the total amount paid by the local members in Minnesota will be $9.2 million. So they more than match the 5.3 share. The state of South Dakota has done the same thing. They have prepaid their amount. Federal government has already put in $81.3 million into the project, and we are constructing the project. Every year that we wait, the project goes up about 6% in cost, and that is what we're trying to beat here by all of us prepaying the federal government in the legislation that we got through the authorization. We'll pay for that inflation so that the state will not be... will not get the 6%, and none of the locals will get that 6%. It'll all be paid for by the state. So with that, I ask that this money be transferred or committed or transferred, I'm not sure the right terminology, from bond money into general fund money so that we can get it all taken care of at one time, moved in there, and then the inflation is done. So thank you.
Mayor Steensman, do you want to add something?
I really don't have anything. I was just asked to ride along. And then while I was standing back there, then he waved for me to come, see? So I didn't know if he wanted me to hold his hand or what.
Well, I'm rather sure.
But the first time that he was here and he talked to me about the water project, I knew Red pretty well, but I said, the way it sounds to me like you guys are out of water, because I said, I think you're drinking something else if you're going to haul water from Missouri River. But it is a good project, and the last few years I've gotten more involved, and so what we're really looking for is somehow how we can get funding, and hopefully you folks know best, and it passed in the bonding, so it must be a approved issue.
Representative Murphy has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a comment that it's a very worthy project, but I'm looking through here, and the committee toured, and hospitality was very nice, and when we were down there, and Mayor Steensman was there, and Red Arndt was there, and we were there, but only their pictures are in here.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a friendly amendment.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I seen you looking, and I seen you opening it, and I knew it was coming.
I wouldn't blindside you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is not the first time I've seen this, and it's a good project. People should be able to drink water and have it freely flow to their homes. I know I'm pretty sure I asked this question last time. Now, all this is drinking water. This is nothing other than drinking water. It's not for business. It's not for poultry or beef or anything, or agriculture, it's all drinking water. Is that correct?
Mr. Arndt.
Madam Chairman, Representative, the water of the Lewis and Clark will go to the member system. It's not going to be used for irrigation. So whatever is in each system will be able to use the water. So I guess like Laverne's ethanol plant, it could be used for that, if it's needed. But it'll be whatever is in each system. The only thing that we, in our bill, on the Lewis and Clark Inc., it cannot be used for irrigation.
Representative Mahoney?
So, this may be for yourself or for the Representative Peterson, but it would be nice to know to have a breakdown of some sort of how much is industrial water and how much is drinking water. And I don't need that answer right now because I don't think you probably have it with you, but a little later. Thank you.
Okay, we'll receive that from you. If there are no further questions, thank you for the presentation and for being with us. And this bill, too, will be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Brown. Representative Kowalski. Representative Kowalski. Would you be willing to move the Representative Brown's bill? Representative Kowalski.
Mr. Chair, I move, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I move that House File 1039 be recommended for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Sir Brown, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Did you need to move my bill?
If your bill has been moved.
Thank you. During the 2006 bonding session, the state awarded $3.65 million to the MCCA's closed landfill program for the cleanup of Edgewater Park dump site in Albert Lea. And the dump site is located right up to the edge of Fountain Lake. Well, since that time, it's been determined that the cost of the project will be between $5 million to $6.1 million. And that's nearly $2.5 million more than was anticipated. The excavation of Edgewater Park dump site cannot begin until the funding has been secured for the project. And for this reason, the City of Albert Lea is requesting an additional $2.5 million bonding dollars from the state to be awarded to the MPCA for the excavation of the site. And then at this point, if it's okay to continue, I'm going to go ahead and introduce Mayor Randy Ehrman from the City of Albert Lea and Kathy Rustis, the Outreach Director of Shell Rock Watershed District, and they can speak in more detail about the project.
Mayor Ehrman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, committee members. My name is Randy Ehrman. I am the Mayor of Albert Lea. And the 30-acre site is located at the north end of Fountain Lake in Albert Lea. It is one of the most used parks in our park system. It is actually the crown jewel of our parks. It has many band performances, picnic areas, and fishing, and is also home to the Bayside Skiers Club for practices and performances. From 1956 to 1972, the site served as the Albert Lea dump. During this time, the borrowed pits were filled with mixed municipal sanitary waste, and open burning was practiced at the dump. After the site was closed in 72, it was covered with 14 feet of lake sediment dredged from Fountain Lake. The City of Albert Lea subsequently developed the site as North Edgewater Park. In 1989, contaminated groundwater was found to be discharged into Fountain Lake at concentrations exceeding Minnesota surface water quality standards. There is also an area where contaminants have been seeping to the surface. Consequently, the site has been the focus of several multimedia environmental investigations undertaken by both the City of Albert Lea and the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. The solution: a new cell construction. The Albert Lea Sanitary Landfill is located approximately 1 mile to the northeast of Edgewater Park dump site. The construction of a new cell, properly lined with leachate collection at the closed landfill, has been proposed to accommodate the waste excavated from Edgewater Park dump site. The Edgewater Park site will be excavated to clean soil and hauled to the new cell. Two-thirds of the cover soil will be retained to restore the site. In order to dispose of approximately 500,000 cubic yards of waste, the landfill cell, approximately 8 acres in size, must be constructed with an average waste thickness of 30 feet. The engineering firm has indicated the water quality will improve immediately upon waste excavation. The MPCA has indicated that this is an opportune time to clean up other areas in the city, such as the hot spots at the closed sanitary landfill and monitored sites at the old Farmland Foods plant, Blazing Star Landing. And as most of you are aware of, in 2001 we had a tragic fire where the Farmlands food plant burned. The city has retained ownership of that site, now demolished the old plant, and now we're looking for some ways to clean up that and have that for development, sort of a renaissance project for our city. This dump site at Fountain Park or Fountain Lake Park has really hampered usage of the park. We have had to close the north end of the park to the public. It can't be used right now, and there is it is affecting dramatically the water quality. And I'll turn it over to Outreach Director Rofschus.
Ms. Rofschus, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back in 2006, the state legislature awarded $3.65 million in bonding funds to remediate this dump site at Edgewater Park. Since then, the engineering firms involved have done further studies that determine that the total project cost will be closer to $5 million, maybe up to $6.1 million. That leaves a shortfall of $2.5 million. And that $5 million to $6 million figure is based on two assumptions. One is on limited restoration of the park. And as Randy said, this is the crown jewel of our park system. You could say this is the gathering space for our community. We've already lost the use of the north end of the park. And it's hard to promote our city as land between the lakes, but we know that this garbage is leaching contaminants into our groundwater and into our lake and even coming to the surface. Now, because this park is so important to our community, we are ready and willing to raise the money locally to restore the site. In fact, we've had some preliminary discussions between the city, the watershed district, and the DNR. We're kind of getting excited about what we could do at that north end, maybe extend our bike trail, maybe restore some wetlands. But before we can get to that point, we need to move that garbage out. And the other assumption for that $5 million to $6 million cost is that we can move that garbage across private land instead of using public roads. If we went on public public roads, we're talking about 35,000 dump truck loads. We would end up trashing the roads, and that would add another $5 million to the project cost. And so securing agreements with these private landowners is key to keeping the costs down. Now, one of the property owners involved would like to develop his land for housing, and so we've got an opportunity here to delay that housing development, which we don't want to delay too long, but we've got an opportunity to secure some agreements to transport the garbage across private land and keep the costs down. And that's why we're asking for the $2.5 million this year so the cleanup can begin and the contamination can end. We'd be happy to answer any questions. We also have two staff people here from the MPCA. Thank you.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor, the local option sales tax that was approved for elderly, does that have anything to do with this, or is it a different project that that you use that tax for?
This is a different project. The local option sales tax has been, by the legislation that we were provided, is for lake cleanup. And it did not specify anything about this dump site.
Representative Lanning.
Madam Chair, is that lake cleanup tied to this contamination caused by the landfill? I mean, is the water quality of the lake directly related to this dump site cleanup? Improvement project?
Mayor Erdman?
Yes, thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Lanning, I think I'll refer that question to Outreach Director Rofschus.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, they're tied together in that we're trying to clean up our local lakes to attract more residents and increase our tourism. This is a direct source. It's called a point source pollution site. And the local option sales tax is more for watershed-wide projects, namely reducing sediment and phosphorus loading to local waters. That local option sales tax is going to raise $15 million. $2.5 million would take a significant percentage of that. We already have several projects in place, including dam replacements, lake reclamation. The state has assumed responsibility for the dump site, and we would just prefer that the state, of course, would follow through on assuming all the costs, except for the full restoration.
Follow-up, Representative Lanning?
I just want to be clear. I mean, the lake is being contaminated by this dump site. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And your local option sales tax is addressing other aspects of the water quality problem?
Yes, namely sediment and phosphorus reduction.
Thank you.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't on this committee last year, but I guess just for my information sake, 3.65 in 2006 was appropriated. How could we be so far off? Who did those estimates to begin with? Who was it? An engineering firm? Was it your city engineer? Was it to come back 2.5? Yeah, or was it a tire salesman who used to be the chair of the committee? I'm just curious who did it. That's a lot to be off 1 year later on an estimate, and so I'm just kind of curious.
To give you a short answer, you know, we did limited testing at first to see the extent of the garbage. Since then, the preliminary engineering studies have been done, and the garbage is much more extensive than previously thought. Okay, we're looking at a smaller area. We're looking at a larger area now. We do have two staff people here from the MPCA. Perhaps it might be better to ask them.
Well, and Madam Chair, I maybe do have a question for them, because kind of following up on what Representative Lanning said, I guess my question is this always the way we do closed dump sites, no local match dollars and 100% state funding, which this looks like, or is this something unique?
Sounds like you would prefer that MPCA staff come forward.
Maybe they could explain that. And then, Madam Chair, while they're coming forward, I have a third question. If you add up 3.65 and 2.50 at 6.15, they've pegged it here at 5 to 6.1, so we're slightly above what the estimate says in their paperwork. And there's a fairly large contingency of up to 25%, which I assume is included in the 6.15. So is this one of those cases that if the money is not used, we come back 2 or 3 years from now, and that's the canceled bond funds that we see? They're issued by MPCA, and they're only issued upon the work that's submitted to them by engineers. And then I guess I have a fourth question while I'm talking, and limited amount of restoration work at the park site, is that appropriate use of the dump site reclamation funds also? Do we reclaim land for parks and other public uses on old dump sites, or again, is that a local issue, not a state funding issue?
We have a gentleman from the MPCA. Please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Douglas Day. I am the supervisor of the closed landfill program at the Pollution Control Agency. I didn't catch all of the questions, but I'll try to begin answering them, and then you can just continue to ask. The first question I understood was that the original bonding for this project was $3.65 million. That was proposed at the last session, and it was approved. That was an early estimate, and as was mentioned earlier, that did not include information that is now available that has better determined what the real costs are for moving that garbage, moving the waste and the contaminated soils to the closed Albert Lea landfill, and building a lined cell to accommodate that waste. So that was the first. That was the first response.
Madam Chair, the second question is, is this the way this fund works? It's all 100% state money for landfill closure, or has there in the past or ever or always, is there a local county, mainly their county landfills, but in cases of city, is there local match dollars that are required, or do we always pick this up 100% state dollars?
This is a unique, Madam Chair, committee members, this is a very unique funding situation. The closed landfill program is only responsible for addressing state permitted landfills that are closed and in the program. This facility, this Riverside dump, is not a state permitted landfill. So it received special bonding appropriation to address it by bringing that waste to the landfill. So this is a unique situation. We do not typically address these types of situations in our program. We only deal with state permitted landfills.
Madam Chair, in your program for state licensed landfills, is there a match required, or do we do it 100%?
We take care of, we are, Madam Chair, committee members, we are responsible for 100% of the costs at our closed landfills.
And Madam Chair, you're collecting monies along the way for that, are
funding,
you?
Yeah, funding for those projects is secured through a combination of bonding, insurance recovery efforts, financial assurance dollars that are returned to the remediation fund and through the state waste tax that's collected.
So, Madam Chair, there are matches to our regular program through indirect sources that we're paying along the way. So I understand this situation a little better. Lastly, the question, maybe not last, second to last. So if we appropriate another $2.5 million to you, then monitor and only release the amount of money you foresee as needed in the future, because, again, we're up to 6.15, and they're estimating between 5 and 6.1 on the literature I have in front of me today.
Mr. Day.
Madam Chair, committee members, that is correct. We would only use those bonding dollars for the involvement of relocating the wastes to the Albert Lea landfill, and we would be the state would be responsible for maintaining that closed landfill, including the additional line cell. We would have no responsibility and no additional costs or monitoring associated with the Riverside dump.
Representative Jackie.
And then my last question was, in other landfill reclamations, do we pick up the role of restoring the above-ground part, the new part, to parkland or other public use properties? Or in the past, has that been picked up locally?
Mr. Day.
On our regular programming. Do we make put a county park in there? Do we, I mean, this is part of their Lakeshore Park, and part of this money is being asked for limited restoration work at the park site into park, I assume, land and usable area.
Madam Chair, many members, I am not aware of a closed landfill program being involved in any costs associated with reclamation of those activities. Again, our costs are specifically associated with the state-permitted closed landfills that we're responsible for addressing, but not for any other sites, such as the Riverside dump. We would not be associated with any of those kinds of long-term costs or reclamation.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Brown, just wondering if you know where this is on the PCA priority list, what number it has.
This, Madam Chair, committee members, this site, as I understand, was associated with the voluntary investigation and cleanup program. It was not associated with the closed landfill program, and it went so far, and then when the city recognized the costs involved with that, they were looking for another mechanism to assist them in trying to address this problem because the costs were so large. So I couldn't tell you in terms of a priority where it might stand. There's no question that this site has environmental impacts associated with it. They've had to close down the bathrooms because of methane intrusion that could cause explosions. There are visible seeps of vinyl chloride that we have identified at that site. So there are problems associated with it. There's no question about that.
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. If committee members would remember, the reason we did that closed landfill program the way we did is because if we had used the responsible party actions and do all the suits to get people to pay their fair share, it would have cost at least twice as much, and so half of it would have been spent on lawyers and lawsuits, and half would have been, I think this roughly about what we had figured back then, half would have been spent on the cleanup. So instead of spending so much money on lawsuits and finding the responsible parties, the state went down the route of, let's just get the job done. And at the time, I think it was anticipated that, you know, you only took the top layer off. And if I remember folks saying back then, there were 15,000 dumps in this state, and some of them were going to be bad. And this is clearly one of those ones. And after we got the closed landfill program going, it kind of slowed down and came to a halt. We had looked at the closed dumps. Folks knew where some were, didn't know where others were. Is that fair to say? So we're going to see more of these, I think. I would again think it's probably less expensive to go the route of not suing everybody in the neighborhood and making a lot of lawyers happy, but to go the route of doing what is being suggested here. But I would ask, has there been any investigation of whether this site was ever insured? Mr. Day?
Madam Chair and Representative Rubinius and committee, I am not aware of that. If the city had insured that, we have not looked into that at all from our aspect.
I think that's one of the things that we would a stone we would not want to leave unturned. The state has been, PCA has been very good. We've collected over $100 million, if I remember, in insurance from these closed landfills, and that helped a lot in the cleanup. And I don't know that that portion of work is finished yet, or if there's still opportunities to collect from insurance companies today.
As I recall, in the legislation for insurance recovery, we are limited to collecting insurance only on the original 106 landfills that were qualified for the closed landfill program and did not include other dumps.
That would not be hard to change. Yes.
Okay.
Representative Calvin.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And for Mr. Day, I just had a question. I noticed on the handout that the MPCA has indicated that this is an opportune time to clean up other areas of the city, and maybe I missed this in the earlier testimony, but we're talking about the closed sanitary landfill and also the monitored sites at the old Farmland Foods plant. Does this money cover that? And if it does, are there parties available that own the old Farmland Foods plant that could assist in the paying for this?
Months.
Who would be the outreach director or the mayor?
Yeah.
That might, if that's a question that we need to get from you later.
We would have to. Yeah, we would need to discuss
okay.
that.
If you could follow up with that, we often get some additional information and put that in members' packets. Although it looks like the mayor might have an answer. Mayor Erdman.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, committee members. The Farmland Foods site, we got the Farmland Foods, a bankruptcy judge in Kansas City, gave us title to the property. So the city has title to the property. That was part of the demolition process. We were able, through the insurance law that is in state of Minnesota, we were able to grab 25% of the insurance proceeds, which was about $3 million, to demolish the plant and grind up the stubble and bricks and mortar and demolish the plant and use that fill. We use that fill for the old high school site. So we have clear title to the property. We have checked with back as far as Wilson Foods in 1916, started the company there, Meatpacking Company, and there is no insurance or no one to chase for that money. So we have clear title to that site.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mayor Erdman. So the city owns the fee title to it, then would you be able to further develop that property or sell it to a developer and maybe recoup some of your costs for that project and this project?
That is what we're... Thank you. Yes, Madam Chairman. Representative, that is what we're trying to do at this point in time. It took probably close to 2 years to get rid of the old plant, and we finally got it to where we have the site now, we have title to the site, and we are trying to prepare it for a developer. Yes. And one thing I might add too on the reclamation of the dump site, the city is prepared to pay all costs for reclamation after the garbage is removed.
Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Ms. Rothaus. You had commented that there would be 3,500 truckloads.
35,000.
35,000, okay.
That's if we have to haul them on the roads. If we can haul them off roads, we can use larger equipment.
Okay, so my question is, that's based on, thank you, Madam Chair, private landowners giving their approval, and you give a value of like $5 million if it was to go on the regular roads. I'm just wondering, can you give us some assurances that that's going to work? I don't know if you've talked to the landowners or if is that included in the price of this? Is that going to throw another linchpin in this and delay it more? What's the status of that?
Okay. The city of Albert Lea has discussed this with the property owners, and at this time they seem willing, though, you know, details of the easements need to be worked out. The $5 million additional cost would be to rebuild the roads if we have to haul them on city and township roads.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing the issue before us, we appreciate the quick education, and the bill will be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you,
Representative Brown. Representative Murphy. Representative Murphy moves House File 1370, 1570.
We were doing that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. A few minutes ago, Representative Anzell talked about what happened when the mining companies mined and then left. And in Proctor, it's the railroad company that owns most of the land in Proctor, and the railroad yard was the center of the whole community, and the workers lived around where they worked, and the town of Proctor grew up over 100 years ago and since, and the township of Midway on the other side of the railroad yard grew, but was more of a farming community, except for a small area of Midway Township, which was Midway Park. And when the before my time, the railroad company built a sanitary sewer. And then before Chairman Elvey's time, over 40 years ago, he's been chairman of the board or on the Midway Township Board for over 40 years. Before that happened, the railroad ditched the sanitary sewer, didn't claim the sanitary sewer anymore, and it turned it over to St. Louis County. But St. Louis County doesn't quite have the records of, or the memory of how that came about. And but St. Louis County now has been responsible for the sanitary district number one, which is in Midway Park in Midway Township. And but they haven't done anything with it because they didn't know it was theirs, supposedly. And they want the township to take it over. But it is a failing system. And so the township, in my opinion, very wisely, is saying not until it's fixed. But they've been in communication with the county, and the county has been in communication with them, and there's been some preliminary work done. And Chairman Eldy and Board Member Jim Aird are here to tell you about that.
Welcome to the committee. Who's speaking first?
Jim.
Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Jim Aird. I'm a supervisor in Midway Township. I also happen to live in Midway Park. I'm the only supervisor that lives in that particular area, and that's kind of my part comes in. The request is for the replacement of a sanitary sewer in Midway Township. I'm sorry, I didn't address you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry. It services about 80 homes in Midway, and that represents about 20% of our township. The rest of the township is wells and septic. It also services 18 houses in the city of Proctor because we border on the one side of it. As Representative Murphy mentioned, it's owned and maintained by St. Louis County. No one can really tell us how that happened. They are taking the lead on the replacement. We're here to speak because eventually we're going to be the owners of it. Once it's done, we will have the ownership of the system. We will operate it. And from Midway Township, it flows through the city of Proctor and then on down to the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. The system was built in by the WPA in the early or late 1930s. It has been identified as in being in danger of failure. There is an infiltration and inflow problem into the sewer. The residents, many of the residents, have spent $1,500 apiece to put in their sump pumps to lessen that problem. That hasn't corrected at all, and the sewer should be replaced. Once into the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, if the district gets overloaded, they do have an overflow problem, which everybody probably has heard about, and it does flow into Lake Superior, which would adversely affect the water quality in the lake. Total cost of the project, and I apologize for not having a packet. I just heard about this meeting on Sunday afternoon. The total cost of the project is $2.4 million. St. Louis County is into it for about $1 million, leaving $1.4 million to be financed by the residents of the township. Our request for $600,000 is to reduce the amount of the burden on the township residents. And I guess at this point I'd like to point out that from what I've heard so far at this meeting, we're just asking for the change that might fall on the floor from the other project that has been presented. I almost wish I would have asked for more. I feel like being township government, we do try to operate as inexpensively as possible. A similar request was made for this funding last year, however, it wasn't funded. Since that time, cost estimates have risen. We are in danger of failure in our system. If the system does fail at any point, it's quite deep in some areas, then it would cost a lot of money to fix something that's not going to be adequate. It's our hope that with your assistance, we can work with St. Louis County through the City of Proctor, replace this aging system, which would do our part to protect the environment in Lake Superior.
Thank you. Mr. Eldy, do you have additional comments?
Well, it was put in there before I was a township officer, but I do recall it, and it is hand-dug. It was hand-dug. They didn't have the facilities to dig things, and it is over 20 feet deep in some areas. It flows gravity into the sanitary district. So they've had some breaks, and they've had to build some shelving in order to get the equipment so it could go deep enough to hit the line. And that line is the old clay type line that the farmers used in the systems. So, you know, it's in pretty tough shape. They've had some cameras in there taking care of looking at it, and it's a very system that's really failing. Many years old.
Representative Murphy, do you have some concluding comments before questions?
I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. Any questions for the author or the testifiers? Well, again, you've obvious. Representative Tingleton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if it's actually to the testifiers or the projects specifically, but you mentioned something about being a small township and not a lot of residents. And I was looking back at Representative Olin, Representative Solberg's bill, House File 1545. And I remember this line in there, and I don't know if members have it in front of you. It's line 15 and 16 on House File 1545. And maybe it's only specifically to flood hazard projects, but I remember seeing this in past years. It talks about to the extent that the cost of the project exceeds 2% of the median household income of the municipality multiplied by the number of households in the municipality. And maybe Mr. Representative Solberg knows. I don't know.
That's House File 1545. That was the Olin bill. Lines 15 and 16. Ms. Dyson.
Madam Chair, Representative Tingle said there may be someone else here who knows more about the flood hazard mitigation program language, but my recollection is that that is specific to that program and is related to some federal funding issues. But it wasn't just for that bill. That's program language that has been in the bonding bill since a certain agreement was reached. And I remember talking to somebody in the program about that when we were looking at adding other townships, because there's a list of townships that are included in that. But it's fairly specific language for that area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that we were covering all the possibilities. Thanks.
Thank you very much for being with us and for presenting.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think we are still waiting. Oh, there he is. Yeah, Representative Demmer. Someone.
Let's move.
Ms. Solberg moves House File 344.
For possible inclusion.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your patience in waiting for me to go to the committee. Madam Chair and members, House File 344 is about some unfinished business. In the state of Minnesota, we have what we call a capital assistance program to help with facilities and communities and organizations putting together waste-to-energy projects. Olmsted and Dodge County are two counties that I represent, have worked together for a number of years and have a waste-to-energy burner. And there's a third burner being put on that's increased capacity about 50%. We're going to go from, and I'll let Mr. Cousineau talk about that a little bit. But currently, the garbage that we have coming from those two counties is vastly more than what the burner can currently handle, and we're having to use the landfills, which we're becoming short of. And so we're trying to get this process done. Going back to the year 2000, Madam Chair, there's $2,000 for each county available through these CAP grants, and we were able to secure $2,000 for one of the counties, and last year in the binding bill, we thought we had another $2,000 for the other county. However, it was not earmarked, and when the MPCA gave
We're a little confused about that number. We don't often deal in 2,000 numbers. Is it really 2,000?
I'm sorry, 2 million.
I was going to say, let's fund this one.
Yeah, right. Okay, then just take it times 10. And make it sorry, Madam Chair. It's $2 million per county. We were able to secure the $2 million for one of the counties, Dodge or Rumpf, it doesn't matter which. We thought we had the other two last year, Madam Chair, and when the MPCA, and it was not earmarked, when the MPCA did their allocations, it was lowered to the 1.2, and so there's 800,000 remaining of the CAP grant that we're eligible for. And, Madam Chair, since the year 2000, these bills have been coming in trying to get this project done, and we'd really like to finish this up, get the last 800,000, and then I'll be done presenting this kind of a bill, Madam Chair. And with that, if we could have Mr. Cousineau.
And this is the Public Works Director?
Yes.
Is that right? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Mike Cousineau. I'm Public Works Director for Olmsted County. This project has been planned for in quite a few years. Our plan has been operating for 20 years now, since 1986, and has very low emission rates. It's a clean, renewable energy source. And that produces steam and electricity, and we want to double the capacity of the facility because of the growth in both counties and the growth in waste. Our goal is to eliminate all landfilling of burnable waste in both counties, which we'll achieve with this project. This project is ready to go. The county did a voluntary environmental impact statement on its own and paid for that study, as well as the PCA staff to review that and a consultant that was hired. That is completed now. We're going through the permitting stage, and we should get construction authorization through the Pollution Control Agency hopefully by May. The design is also being done at this time and should be completed by June, and we hope to go to construction in July. So this project will be built. Is authorized issuing bonds for the project, and they'll be sold next Tuesday, $71.4 million. So this project is ongoing. We're asking the state to participate in 5% of the project cost through the CAP program, of which we can get $2 million per county. And there's a number of benefits to this. We're going to increase the labor force, of course, to with the plant some 30%, we are going to avoid landfilling, and this will help the governor's renewable energy vision of 25% by the year 2025. And the cost to our households, we figured, is only going to be about $2.36 per month when we get through this project. We've paid off the original bond issue when the plant was built. That's February 1st, so we have the bonding capacity to continue and complete this project. We're very anxious. The community is extremely supportive of this project. We had no negative comments on the environmental review process to date. So the community is behind it. The county board is behind it. Both county boards. We have a joint powers agreement with Dodge County through the year 2028. So this is following the state hierarchy and managing waste. So we ask your support for the bill.
Ben Solberg has a question.
Madam Chair, two questions. One of the things that we had with the bill that was in here earlier was some problems of being able to pay off with bond proceeds things that have already been bonded for. And I would caution you to be careful that you don't get an $800,000 bond and have already sold bonds, because you won't be able to use those if we pass it. So check with bond council and the state bond council to make sure that you don't goof up.
In other words, you can't bond for something that's already been done. You can't have started the project. And
we're aware of that.
And then, Madam Chair, my second one is, it says that Dodge and Olmsted counties have stable waste disposal rates with household costs below other counties. Have you looked at coming up with the average of other counties and see what kind of funds those would generate to help pay off the bonds?
Mr. President?
Our program is a 100% user fee supported program and doesn't rely on any of the property taxes. So all of the waste generators pay for the program. That includes all of the expenses, including the bond cost. Those are all included in our tip fee and our service charge, which all the users pay through the haulers or self-hauling. So everybody pays in accordance with how much waste they dispose of.
Well, Madam Chair, that's not the question. I understand that. I mean, most counties, I pay the tipping fee as well. I mean, the hauler pays it, but he really puts it on my bill. My question is if your tipping fees are for household are below other counties, have you looked at the ability to be at other counties so that there's an equitability across that area and use that proceeds to pay off the bonds instead of coming to the state for the $800,000? I mean, I'm not against your bill, but if yours are lower than other ones, there may be some resentment.
What I was referring, Madam Chair and members, what I was referring to is we've done studies to look at other communities, what they're paying, what the individual homeowner is paying for waste disposal costs compared to what we're doing. Even though we have a higher tip fee than other programs or other areas that use landfills, our cost to the homeowner is lower. And I'm not sure what the average is across the state, but we've done that for our own use and where the county board has been interested in that. And one of the reasons it's been that way is because we've had a very stable rate structure where we do not increase that rate. We've held to that for over 12 years, and that has kept the haulers competitive where they've kept the price down to the individual homeowners.
Representative Demmer, I think, wanted to add something.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll let Mr. Cousineau interject if I say something that's not quite right here, but Representative Solberg, to your point, I think it would be very difficult because, quite frankly, the tipping fees are higher to go to this facility than they are if they go to a landfill. And there's been some controversy. In fact, Olmsted County just got done negotiating with their haulers in the county, and they were concerned about, because they have to take their garbage here. They can't take it to a landfill. And their tipping fees here are higher than if they'd go to a landfill, even outside the county or outside the state. So I don't know. And tipping fees are what's been keeping this thing going and making it self-sufficient, so taxpayer dollars. So I think the county's done a pretty good job of trying to make sure it's taking care of itself, either from the steam that they're producing and or from the tipping fees to pay the cost so there's no taxpayer dollars involved, and yet keep the tipping fees as close as possible to competitive so that we aren't on a line for the garbage people like myself that live in Dodge County for our garbage. But I think it's been very controversial because, like I said, the haulers have wanted, and there have been some that they have to catch doing this, they're not supposed to, taking it outside where it is cheaper to go to a landfill. And, of course, what we want it to do is go to the burner.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, did you have something additionally to
just
add?
One other point, Madam Chair, okay. Members. We just negotiated a 15-year contract with our haulers to bring the waste to our facility. That's a key component of most of these projects, of assuring that you have a waste stream. That's how we have an assurance to be able to sell the bonds to the bond market. So that critical element has been completed.
Any concluding remarks, Representative Demers?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, this is incenting the county to continue doing the right thing. Like I said, we do have tipping fees that are slightly higher in our two counties because we want the garbage to go here where it's recycled. Instead of going to the landfill, it's being done for the right reasons. Here at the legislature, we do lots of things to try to incent the right things, so we would really appreciate the opportunity to get this finished up and get the project going.
Thank you.
Members,
for our next meeting, we are switching rooms because it's going to be televised on Thursday, March 8th. We'll be in room 5. And because so many are new, we're talking about the whole kind of big picture of regional transit planning and regional transit ways. And in the context of that, we'll have very brief presentations of a whole range of bills. You can tell that we finally turned the corner on this because suddenly everyone wants one of these. And so there are really quite a number of bills introduced on this issue, but they'll be in the context of education generally to the committee about the broad issue. So we'll be in room 5, we'll be on television, and we'll be moving very quickly in that meeting. Meeting adjourned.